Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
The Islamic State terrorist group claimed responsibility for the attacks at the Brussels airport and metro that killed at least 30 people and injured 130 others. Two bombs exploded at Zaventem Airport about 8 in the morning near the Swissport airline passenger area and a Starbucks coffee shop. At least 11 people were killed in the two airport bombings. About an hour later, another bomb exploded at the Malbec metro station during rush hour. A spokesman for the Brussels metro system said the explosion on a train killed as many as 20 people and injured 55. The metro station is also near the European Union headquarters. Belgian Prime Minister Charles Michel told reporters, "This is a black moment in our country. Everyone please be calm and show solidarity. What we feared has come to pass. Our country has been struck by attacks which are blind, violent, and cowardly." In a statement, French President François Hollande said, "Through the attacks in Brussels, the whole of Europe has been hit." The French Prime Minister added, "We are at war. We have been subjected for the last few months in Europe to acts of war." In Havana, Cuba, President Barack Obama said, "We will do whatever is necessary to support our friend and ally Belgium in bringing to justice those who are responsible. And this is yet another reminder that the world must unite, regardless of nationality or race or faith, in fighting against the scourge of terrorism." After the explosions, officials in Belgium closed the airport, metro system, other train stations, schools, shopping areas, and museums. They told people who had not already departed for work to stay home. And they told those already at their offices to remain there. Belgian officials also released a photo taken from closed-circuit TV of three men with luggage carts. They said two of them were the suicide bombers and that the third, dressed in a light-colored coat, black hat, and glasses, was at large. Police later found a nail-filled bomb, chemical products, and an Islamic State flag while searching a house in the Sherbeek neighborhood. The attacks happened just days after the arrest of Salah Abdeslam in Brussels. He is accused of being one of the leaders of the deadly Paris terrorist attacks in November. Some experts feared that his supporters would answer his arrest with attacks in Brussels. A Vietnamese blogger and his assistant will go on trial this week for posting stories online that the government considers harmful to the Vietnamese public. Amnesty International says the two have been kept in prison for the last 2 years, a clear violation of human rights. Mario Ritter reports.
A well-known Vietnamese blogger will go on trial this week for posting stories that the government says cause people to lose faith in the government. Nguyen Hu Vinh and his assistant, Nguyen Thi Minh Thuy, have been in jail since 2014. Their lawyer says the trial will begin on Wednesday. 59-year-old Vinh is a former police officer and son of a late government minister. He started his Ba Sam blog in 2007 and later began two other blogs on citizens' rights and Vietnamese history. The blogs provide links to news stories about politics, social, economic, and cultural issues. The Associated Press said the blogs use stories from both state media and political activists. Vietnamese state media reported the two bloggers are charged with posting more than 20 stories with untruthful and groundless content. The government says the stories present a one-sided and pessimistic view, causing anxiety and worry and affecting the people's confidence in Vietnam's Communist Party and government. Vinh is known in Vietnam as An Ba Sam. He was a police officer in the Ministry of Public Security in Hanoi. He quit in 1999 to set up a private investigation company. His father was a government minister who served as Vietnam's ambassador to the former Soviet Union. Ha Huy Sun is Vinh's lawyer. He said Vinh and Thuy deny the charges against them. The two have said they have no relations to the postings on their blogs, the lawyer told the Associated Press. Amnesty International criticized Vietnam Tuesday for continuing to keep the two bloggers in prison and putting them on trial. It called for their immediate release. Amnesty International said the government is trying to remove legitimate criticism and making people afraid to ask questions of their leaders. Amnesty International said it has health concerns about Vinh. The human rights group said Vinh has had a skin condition for the past 6 months and was not given needed treatment. I'm Mario Ritter.
The United States Marine Corps is supporting Iraqi forces with the first ever all-American firebase in the conflict against the Islamic State in northern Iraq. Jim Dressback explains what a firebase is and what it means for the region.
The U.S. military has built the first all-American firebase in Iraq. A firebase is an area in a war zone where artillery can be massed to provide firepower in support of other military units. The firebase is near the town of Makmur in northern Iraq. About 200 U.S. Marines have been assigned to the base. Their mission is to protect American advisors and Iraqis who are at a nearby Iraqi military base. An American spokesman, Colonel Steve Warren, said, "This is the first time that we've established a spot that's only American." Warren continued to say, "Deploying the Marines to a U.S.-only base was a tactical decision made because of space restrictions. The Iraqis are preparing an offensive to capture Mosul. The town has been occupied by the Islamic State for nearly 2 years. The firebase is behind the front lines, and the American base has been attacked. Islamic State fighters fired small arms at the base Monday. Two IS fighters were killed. No Americans were wounded. The arms exchange took place 2 days after U.S. Marine Staff Sergeant Lewis Carden was killed at the base. IS fighters fired two rockets during that assault. I'm Jim Dressbach.
The leader of the National League for Democracy in Myanmar would have to give up her party's leadership and her seat in parliament if she becomes a member of the country's cabinet. Mario Ritter has the story.
Democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi has been nominated to become a member of the cabinet of Myanmar's president-elect Thein Chaw. The Nobel Peace Prize winner's name was on a list of proposed ministers announced Tuesday by the Speaker of Parliament. The list has Aung San Suu Kyi's name next to four posts: Minister of the President's Office, Foreign Affairs, Energy, and Education. If she takes the post of Foreign Minister, she would have to give up her seat in Parliament and leadership of the National League for Democracy Party, or NLD. She led the party to a landslide victory in last November's parliamentary elections. The election ended 50 years of complete or partial military rule. Aung San Suu Kyi is barred from serving as president because of a provision in the constitution placed there by Myanmar's former military rulers. The constitution bars anyone with a foreign spouse or children from being president. Aung San Suu Kyi's late husband and her two sons are British citizens. Aung San Suu Kyi has declared she will keep power over President Thein Chaw. He is her hand-picked president and a lifelong friend and confidant. It is unclear if Aung San Suu Kyi will accept a position in the cabinet. Mong Zarni is an activist and a researcher at the London School for Economics. He told VOA that he welcomes the announcement. However, he said the military remains a strong force in the government. He added that it is not in the military's interest to permit the NLD to carry out many reforms to the political system. I'm Mario Ritter.
Next, Katie Weaver reports on comments made by President Barack Obama on the final day of his trip to Cuba.
President Barack Obama said, "It is time for the United States and Cuba to move beyond their differences and toward a future that will help both nations." Obama made the statement during a televised speech in Cuba. "I have come here to extend a hand of friendship to the Cuban people," Obama said. "It is time for us to leave the past behind. It won't be easy, and there will be setbacks, and it will take time." He was speaking at the Gran Teatro de Havana. The gathering included Cuban President Raúl Castro and other officials and civil leaders. Also present were members of Obama's government and U.S. lawmakers. Obama expressed hope for future relations between the United States and Cuba and their peoples. He said major policy changes between the former enemies must begin on a human level. He called for understanding, forgiveness, and listening. The audience clapped loudly when Obama said he believes in the Cuban people. The American president spoke about the two nations' painful history and separation. Obama also talked of the common values the nations share, including religion, patriotism, pride, family commitment, and education. But he added, there remain deep divisions in their beliefs on economic, societal, and governmental issues. Obama said directly to Castro, "You do not need to fear a threat from the United States." And he added that the Cuban government does not have to fear the voices of the Cuban people. Obama said, "People should be able to criticize their government and choose those who govern them." The United States began to ease restrictions on travel and business linked to Cuba with the renewal of diplomatic ties in July. But President Obama said Tuesday more changes are needed, especially on human rights. Castro has blamed the 55-year U.S. embargo on Cuba for many of the nation's problems. He has repeatedly urged Obama to pressure the U.S. Congress to end it. Obama referred to that issue during his speech. "As President of the United States, I have called on our Congress to lift the Cuban embargo," he said, to huge applause. "It is an outdated burden on the Cuban people. It's a burden on the Americans who want to work or do business or invest here in Cuba." Lawmakers have criticized Obama's policy change from isolation to engagement with Cuba. Opponents say the policy compromises too much. After the speech, both leaders left the crowded theater as the audience stood and clapped. Obama next went to the new U.S. Embassy in Havana, where he met with Cuban dissidents and members of civil society. Joined by U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, the president spoke about the importance of hearing directly from Cubans as the U.S. shapes its policy toward Cuba. "It requires, many times, great courage to be active in civil life here in Cuba," President Obama said. "This is an area where we continue to have deep differences with the Cuban government." Obama is attending a baseball game between Major League Baseball's Tampa Bay Rays and the Cuban national team. He will then depart for Argentina. I'm Katie Weaver.
Many cars in advertisements, exhibits, and at car dealerships in the United States are red, blue, or green. But almost 75% of new cars sold in the United States are black, white, silver, or gray. Les Jackson is a reporter who writes about cars. He says the car colors Americans choose do not show dirt as much as the colors of other cars. He says that means the owners wash their cars less, saving money. And he notes some areas that are suffering from water shortages do not permit people to wash their cars often, if at all. Dan Benton works for a company called Axalta, which makes supplies for international car makers. He says when white cars are sold by their owners, they often sell for higher amounts than cars of other colors.
And he notes that white cars absorb less energy than cars of other colors. This means temperatures inside them are lower in warmer areas. Benton also says research at Monash University in Australia suggests that there is a lower risk of crashes during the day for white cars compared with darker ones. Car buyers in other countries also like white. Jane Harrington works for PPG Industries, a company that makes paint for cars. She said in China, buyers say white makes a small car look bigger. Axalta says about 11% of cars sold in North America are red, and 8% are blue. In South America, 10% of new cars sold are red. Green has become less popular. Benton notes that in the mid-1990s, green was the most popular color in North America. Today, green is hard to find. Sometime in the future, people may not have to choose the color of their car. Technology may let owners change their car's paint color anytime. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
This is What's Trending Today. Google has chosen the national winner of its Doodle for Google contest. Doodle means draw. School-aged children across the United States sent their drawings to Google in 2015. For the contest, students created doodles centered around the theme, "What makes me, me?" 15-year-old Akila Johnson was this year's winner. Johnson is a student at Eastern Senior High School in Washington, D.C. She titled her doodle, "My Afrocentric Life." She wrote in a Google blog post, "I based this picture off my lifestyle and what has made me into what I am today." The word Google in Johnson's doodle is drawn like a hair braid. She painted the word power in black and drew the image of a woman's fist that comes from one of her favorite artists. Johnson's winning drawing also included signs from the Black Lives Matter movement. Her drawing trended on social media. Johnson's doodle was the main image on the U.S. Google homepage on Monday and Tuesday. She will receive a $30,000 college scholarship, and her high school will receive a $50,000 award from Google. Johnson told the Washington Post newspaper, "I'm excited about the scholarship, and I'm excited about Google's homepage even more." Google has hosted a Doodle for Google contest every year in the United States since 2008. Doodle for Google contests take place in many other countries, including India, Pakistan, Brazil, Mexico, and Peru. In 2015, Google received more than 100,000 entries from students across the United States. And that's what's trending today.
A member of the National People's Standing Congress in Beijing says that children in Hong Kong do not know enough about Chinese history. John Russell reports on suggested education reforms in Hong Kong and the debates the proposed changes are causing.
Proposed education changes are causing debates in Hong Kong about its own future. Rita Fan is a member of the National People's Congress Standing Committee in Beijing. She told the state-run Xinhua news agency that Hong Kong's youth do not know enough about China's history or the central government's successes. Fan, a former head of the city's legislative council, added that Hong Kong schools teach a biased view of China and asked for a more positive view. Her comment brought criticism from Emily Lau, a legislative council member in Hong Kong. Lau said, "Well, they should have a more accurate grasp of what's happening here, so when they go to Beijing, they can give a more accurate picture and representation to the central government." The comment is one in a series of proposed changes that drew criticism in Hong Kong. Many people in Hong Kong write with traditional characters. In mainland China, people commonly use simplified characters, characters written in a simpler style. Recently, Hong Kong's Education Bureau released a document that called for students to recognize and read simplified Chinese in order to expand students' reading range and strengthen communication with mainland and foreign students. The debate over Chinese characters came in the same month that a riot took place in Hong Kong. Demonstrators said they were protesting against the loss of Hong Kong's traditional culture. Hong Kong's Education Bureau has since said that it will not replace traditional characters with simplified characters. In 2012, a booklet called The China Model gave suggestions for how to change Hong Kong's curriculum. The booklet criticized multi-party systems. It included pictures of Chinese leaders and said the Communist Party was progressive, selfless, and united. The booklet caused protests in Hong Kong. Tens of thousands of people, including students, demonstrated against the booklet and its ideas. Joseph Cheng, a democracy activist, said that was the beginning of an effort to change Hong Kong's curriculum. "I do believe that the education sector, the primary and secondary schools, are now a very important focus of the pro-Beijing United Front. They certainly have been demanding stronger patriotic programs," Cheng said. Sally Tung Mei-Ching is a member of Socialist Action. She said Hong Kong's youth strongly oppose China's growing political and cultural influence on the city. "They teach students how to appreciate the Communist Party, but in a very biased way. So this is why a lot of young people really hate China, not China as a whole, but the Chinese regime, because we want democratic rights," she said. Joshua Wong is a pro-democracy activist who founded Scholarism. The group played a major role in the 2012 protests against education reform in Hong Kong. This week, Wong said he plans to form a new political party. "The party will call for Hong Kong to declare independence in 2047. That is when the 1997 handover agreement between China and Britain will expire." I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.